The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Weekly Extra today, League Cup drama. Chelsea win at Emirates, good news for Moose Blues, but Gunners out of League Cup already. What awaits their fans this season? A dream of a trophy or just more atrophy? There's a big game with Liverpool this weekend, which just might tell us. Elsewhere, there's Spurs at Everton. The first ever top flight Welsh derby. We'll be looking at those games and more, plus that crazy 10-goal thriller at the Bernabeu, and all the thrills and spills of Italy's midweek as well, with Fiorentina and Napoli. There's the scandal at Blatter's Oxford Union appearance, as nation's brightest actually applaud ageing Swiss charlatan. Your posts and tweets, and the Palace succession. They look clueless, they don't want Tony Pulis. If you ask a bookie, it's odds on for Cookie, or even Alex McLeish, although that might be them taking the piche. All those questions and more discussed in today's Football Weekly Extra. Well, hi everybody. Simon Burnton's back.
I am.
Right, good news for listeners with sore eardrums that need a little bit of massaging.
Is that so?
Ooh, mine are feeling better already, Simon.
Great.
Here's Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Barry just tried to blackmail us into shoehorning in a reference to his radio show.
Sundays, 11 to 1, TalkSport.
He won't tell us why a referee and a mouth organ are going to be involved.
Yeah.
That's poor, Barry, that's poor. Remember, we knew you when you were little.
I'm still little.
Yep. Amy Lawrence. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Jimbo.
Have you got any stories about mouth organs and referees?
None that I would spring to mind, though.
Okay. All right. So I'll just have to go on then to the League Cup. League Cup, what is it? If it's the quarterfinals next, this would be what? The round of 16, would it be?
Fourth round in official terms.
Okay. Thanks, Sam.
Yep.
And, I mentioned the fact that Arsenal are playing Liverpool this weekend, which many people would say is the big game of the Premier League round. Of course, Arsenal coming into that clash at the Emirates, fresh from two home defeats in a row. Amy, were you at the game?
I was, yes. I was at both of those defeats that you reference, and they were quite different. And they were both lessons that I think were quite large lessons for Arsenal to take on in different ways. I think the Chelsea game is a pretty easy one to forget about, because my view of this competition is that if Chelsea or Manchester City take it seriously and want to win it, then they ought to win it every year, because there is plainly such a big gap between any kind of, it's difficult to call it second string, but a heavily rotated side that belongs to either Chelsea or Manchester City and pretty much anybody else. So a team is only as strong as its weakest links, and Chelsea's weakest link was probably Essien, who, even with very creaky knees and looking a bit slow and having not played a lot of football recently, still look perfectly fine. And Arsenal's weakest link, well, there's a few contenders, but Nicholas Bentley didn't have his finest
hour. Did he not?
No, which I think people were looking at him to make an impression. He was obviously looking to make an impression. Mm. But a difficult job against Luiz and Cahill on his own. But he didn't make... It was the effort levels that were probably a bit more disciplined. He didn't really seem to be sort of chasing or hunting. You'd think you'd be desperate to prove yourself.
How much of a B-team was it that Wenger fielded?
Well, Jenkinson, who was heavily implicated in giving away a bit of a dopey first goal, is clearly not first choice right back. And Rio Miachi, I don't think, would have figured if Gnabry would have been fit.
Right.
He's been struggling with the problem. But Arsenal always have this thing where it's like, if everybody's fit, if Podolski was fit, if Walcott was fit, if Oxlade-Chamberlain was fit, well, you'd be playing a much stronger second string. But that's just fancy land, because nobody's ever going to be fit all at the same time.
Okay, well, you mentioned the first Chelsea goal, but as Piliqueta, and lovely to see Mata.
He also gave an extremely charming interview.
Didn't he? Did you hear that?
The highlights programme.
Yeah.
I wanted to give him a shake his hand and invite him over for dinner. I don't know him as a person, but he certainly acted like the opposite of a rampant egocentric.
Is it easier to behave really well if you're getting paid a really massive wage for, and you're a star with your national team and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
I'm sure it helps to sugar the pill, but
I wouldn't know.
Yeah. But, I mean, it must certainly hurt a man's... he's the player of the season 2 years running.
Yeah.
And if any player has a right to stamp his feet and say, "What the hell are you doing here, coach?" It's probably him.
just going to say on Chelsea that I think as much as you can discuss the quality of their overall squad, another big difference between the two teams was just the Mourinho factor.
Mm.
And you see a game like that and you see how he can instill that, I want to win every single game we ever play. I don't care who we're playing against and which team I'm putting out. And I think that was so obvious.
So Wenger doesn't have that?
Well, it's not quite the same. But
he's not as intense as Jose.
I think, no, not in terms of that win at all costs mentality.
Certainly, I was surprised to see Azpilicueta chasing that ball down. It seemed like a lost cause and not really his job to be doing that. But
then on Sunday, that was exactly the way that they got the result against Man City, of course.
Indeed, yeah. But it's a forward job to chase down the loose balls bouncing around at the around the opposition penalty area and hope for a lucky break. But yeah, I mean, I was impressed that he really put in a lot of effort for what should have been a totally lost cause.
Right. Well,
it's an interesting time coming up for Arsenal because they've got games against Liverpool, Borussia Dortmund, Manchester United, and Southampton. You know, super sore away Southampton. So, and they're not playing as well as they have been. And for a team on top of the league, they've only kept 2 clean sheets in 9 games in the Premier League. And it's very difficult to imagine they won't concede against Liverpool because with Sturridge and Suarez in such fine form.
Interesting. So these next 4 games could really confirm them as proper heavyweight contenders for all sorts of things, or see the wheels come off in quite spectacular fashion.
Yes.
Starting with Liverpool this weekend.
Yeah, I have a feeling Liverpool are going to beat them.
Right. But Suarez, as all the papers saying, finally getting to complete his move to the Emirates, albeit for only 1 game. And they have a terrific record against Liverpool. They've only lost one of their last 12 meetings with the side from Anfield. But Suarez and Sturridge looking awesome last weekend against West Brom. Meanwhile, for Arsenal, you've got Ramsey who's putting up great numbers. Giroud's on great numbers as well. What about, though, Flamini? Will he be back and could that be the key factor in this game?
No and yes.
Ah. OK, then. Really? It's still that concussion?
I think, no, it's not. No, he picked up a groin injury. Oh. He went against Crystal Palace. He came off after 7 minutes. And I think the prognosis for that was a lot worse than they were hoping. And he might be out for 2 or 3 more weeks, which is this key period for Arsenal. Ooh. And I think that they miss him dearly when he's not there. He considers himself the first line of defence. And it's been a long time since Arsenal have had a player like that. Probably since Rami was last here, actually, that would say that from their midfield.
Who will take his place?
Arteta should be back because he's just got a 1-game ban when he got sent off against Crystal Palace.
Mm.
But who plays alongside him is interesting. And Wenger's tended to go for Ramsey, but I'm not convinced that's the best idea because Ramsey seems to get caught between knowing that he ought to be being disciplined, but instinctively wanting to go forward and be creative, which is where he's been
cognitive
successful.
Dissonance. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think Wilshere would be a much better balance to be playing alongside Arteta in the two more defensive-minded midfield.
All right, that's what Amy thinks. Crikey, so you reckon Liverpool then, Barry?
Yeah, I think Liverpool win a low-scoring encounter or Arsenal could possibly prevail in a very high-scoring one.
Those are two options. All right then. Meanwhile, Chelsea, having flexed their muscles at the Emirates, head off to Newcastle. Ooh, where Newcastle, you know, they've been quietly having a bit of a sticky time. They haven't won in 5 now, and of course they've just been defeated in the derby. And there's all that kind of pressure building on Pardew, supposedly falling out of favour with Joe Kinnear and Mike Ashley.
It did look like they played okay against Manchester City on Wednesday night, though they lost after extra time. They had a few chances to have won that match, which, I mean, margins are slim in football, I suppose, but a victory over Manchester City, whatever side they put out in the League Cup, would have certainly been a fillip.
Certainly would, wouldn't it?
Papi Cisse is horribly out of form. I couldn't hit the proverbial cow's arse with a banjo at the moment, which is not good. He missed some very good chances against Manchester City, and it must be very dispiriting for them to have been the better team over 90 minutes. I don't think it's unfair to say that, and
against
still
City.
Lose. Yeah,
yeah,
and yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, I had to do an article for today about managers. Apart from in the close season, November is the time of year when is the highest turnover of Premier League managers.
Really?
Mm. It's 30. There's been, I mean, it's quite rare, but since the inception of the Premier League, 30 managers have moved on in November, compared to, I think, the next highest, 20. Obviously, late May and June is the time when most of them change jobs. But
November is the cruelest month.
Yeah, apparently so. I suppose it's the case that chairmen are able to assess the wreckage of a poor start to the season, decide to change things and bring in someone who will have enough time to turn things around. But my studious research showed that it rarely works, because I think that the last four managers to move on in November, three of the teams they were managing got relegated anyway.
Right.
The exception being Spurs, who, I don't know if you're aware of this, but they only had 2 points from 8 games when Harry Redknapp came in, something he's never mentioned, but you can tell if you do your research, and they stayed up.
My word.
I just noticed a great story that somebody had posted below the line after the Newcastle-Man City game last night, talking about analysing some of the manifold issues at Newcastle, one of them being the coaching team that Pardew has with him, which I think is Steve Stone and John Carver. John Carver has been growling away in the background of Newcastle dugouts for quite some time. And some fella came on and said, well, many moons ago, John Carver was in charge of our boys' team, and his attitudes and methods were, if somebody was late for training, that all the other players would form a sort of human tunnel, and then the latecomer would have to go through the tunnel and was allowed to be kicked and punched on their way through, which just sounds like an interesting way of dealing with indiscipline, if late coming is such a thing amongst young players. And he was also apparently quite good at chucking cones at players when he perceived that they hadn't done so very well. So
I wonder how Newcastle's foreign players take to that kind of character building.
Didn't Craig Bellamy throw a chair or attack John Carver with a chair, or was it the other way around during Graham Souness's regime?
Right.
And also, we used to do that thing at school with the
form. Yeah, the gauntlet.
It was called a chicken run.
Chicken run, there you go.
They teach it in the UEFA A badge, I think.
Cool. Of course, that's all allegedly. And that's also, coincidentally, it for part one. There's loads more still to discuss. Stay with us, listeners, stay with us. More Simon Burnton after this. Simon Burnton. Other League Cup news. Man United thumped Norwich 4-0. Hey, so is that Man United sorted?
Because they beat Norwich 4-0?
Yeah.
Well, they needed an extremely generous refereeing decision to get them off the mark. It was a really weird penalty award. The type that people look at and say, oh, Ruddy Man United, that's them getting the decisions again.
Was Ruddy involved in the penalty decision or no? Oh, they had Mark Bunn playing instead. That's a shame.
Are you saying Norwich got a Bunn deal?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think the goalkeeper was involved in the penalty award. I think it was Leroy Fer, who was...
Was it an unfair decision?
It was an unfair decision, and he was perceived to have tripped Hernandez.
Got nothing on that.
Yeah. It was a terrible decision.
Right.
And it was downhill from there.
It wasn't a penalty with a capital P then, but with a little p.
Yeah, indeed, yes.
Anyway, all right. That's enough, Amy. Amy, come back. The door's locked. You can't get out that way. Anyway, now, in other League Cup news, Stoke beat Birmingham, West Ham beat Burnley, Man City beat Newcastle, the game you mentioned there, and Spurs got past Hull on penalties, which means the quarterfinal draw looks like this. Leicester City, who beat Fulham, they host Manchester City. Stoke City host Man United. Sunderland or Southampton, because they haven't played their game yet, face Chelsea. And, ooh, this one looks a bit saucy, Spurs have West Ham.
There was quite certainly,
everyone wants to.
I was at White Lane last night, and there was a big cheer when that draw was announced. They were clearly pleased.
You were at White Hart Lane last night, and how did the fans respond to the gentle encouragement that AVB offered them after their previous match with Hull?
Generally, pretty well. And Villas-Boas certainly he praised them highly afterwards, as you'd expect he probably would. It was quite a frustrating game for Spurs, and they did lots of pretty passing through midfield and then nothing once they got near the penalty area. And they were losing for a while, looked like they might be going out, and it was frustrating for them. And Hull defended brilliantly and attacked quite cohesively. And although Tottenham probably looked the better team for long periods, they didn't look like they knew what to do with that superiority, and Hull really looked like they had an idea. Even though they had to reorganise as the game went on, they lost a defender and they rejigged their team. They really looked like a unit.
Hull. All right. Who did they have up front last night, I suppose?
They had Defoe playing on his own with three marauding forwards behind him. Sigurdsson, who scored a brilliant opening goal, really lovely opening goal. Eriksen, who wasn't enormously effective, and Lamella.
All right, how did Lamella do? Because he's hit the ground not running.
Yeah, he's hit the ground standing.
Right.
And I thought he was pretty. He showed some nice touches, but he just wasn't very effective at all. And he missed his penalty in the shootout as well, which doesn't help.
Well, Spurs, after all of that, this weekend face a real test against their rivals for a top four spot. You'd have to say Everton. They're going to be at Everton. Everton's record at Goodison Park, it's awesome. The last 10 matches they've had at home, they've had 9 wins and 1 draw. Overall, they've had 5 wins in the last 6, which I think is true of Spurs as well. Is that right? I think so. Barry?
This is sort of a rerun of the fixture that pretty much cost Spurs their place in the top four last season when they were winning at Goodison and Everton scored 2 goals in injury time to beat them. And that was a huge defeat for Spurs, a very costly one. And even though their lack of goals would be a huge source of concern, and I reckon Everton are probably a good bet to win that game.
And Tottenham, of course, coming off extra time and penalties and all that drama on Wednesday. So
they did make 8 changes to to the team that played last weekend. So they'll have some fresh legs to come back.
Right. Amy?
Everton, I haven't got the figures to hand, but they must have played a fair few amount fewer matches than Spurs, because not being in Europe or having a League Cup game recently, I'm sure they ought to feel like they've got quite a little bit more freshness. And I think there's a similar thing going on with the Arsenal-Liverpool game you mentioned, where by Saturday it will be Arsenal's 16th game and Liverpool's 11th, which is quite a substantial difference at this stage of the season, that 5 games difference.
And also Spurs beat Hull and Sunderland play Hull on Saturday. Sunderland's still high in the hog, obviously, after their morale-boosting win against Newcastle, whereas Hull, I checked this morning, and I think they had 6 or 7 first-team regulars playing against Tottenham.
Right.
So they've played 120 minutes. Sunderland haven't had a game. They will be deflated after losing on penalties, coming so close to beating Tottenham, and you'd have to say you'd fancy Sunderland to win.
Well, except that if anybody knows how to make Sunderland lose, it's Steve Bruce. Sunderland have won their last 6 games against Hull in the league, says the stats. Interesting.
Steve Bruce was speaking after the last night's game. Obviously, they played Spurs on Sunday and lost 1-0 to a controversial late penalty, and then lost again on Wednesday night on penalties. And Bruce was trying to spin it as that they'd been undefeated against Spurs to all extents and purposes, having only lost to unfair penalties and then other penalties. And therefore, it's been a morale-boosting week for them, and they can go into that Sunderland game on the crest of a wave.
Right, well, of course, Sunderland...
My mistake. I've been such an idiot.
Are you, you're quietly confident, then, that Sunderland are going to continue this one-game winning streak, then?
I think they might turn it into a 2-game winning streak.
Cool.
Yeah. Do you think that's a consolation to El Mohammadi? Steve Bruce puts his arm down and goes, "Don't worry, mate. We've not lost either.
You're
of these
a winner
two games.
In my eyes." Yeah.
Speaking of teams that are in Europe against teams that aren't in Europe, what about the exceptional event that will happen this Sunday, Amy? The very first ever Welsh derby in the top flight.
Woof.
Surely you mean bah? That's producer Ben's show. I'm just doing it for him. Abuse directed to producer Ben, please. Now, there's a history of 1-0 victories of late between these two teams, although they obviously haven't met in the top flight. Famously, one involving a coin thrown by a fan which struck referee Mike Dean, and as fate would have it, he's the man in charge this weekend again.
Yeah, I was reading about that this morning. The guy who, I think some fella from Pontypridd, got hauled before the beak for throwing the coin. He's a Cardiff City fan. And he got off with a £200 fine or something.
Really?
As I recall, he drew blood, and Mike Dean was quite distressed over the incident.
Well,
as you would be.
Exactly was he supposed to deliver the £200?
Just throw them at the judge, individual little nuggets. So anyway, look, hopefully he won't get hit by a coin this time.
All right, well, Cardiff Police on red alert.
That game's on at 4 o'clock.
On the Sunday?
Yeah, it gives any fans who are of a mind plenty of time to get liquored up beforehand.
Mm.
If Cardiff,
that is true, is it? Sorry, Amy.
I was going to say, if Cardiff win, they go above Swansea. So
right.
For all the sort of shenanigans that made for a difficult period for them, I think they'd be fairly happy if that were to happen on Sunday evening.
Okay.
It should be a weird one, because Swansea's sort of modus operandi is patient passing game, whereas this is going to be a fairly intense game, I'd imagine. Cardiff might have to be, you know, pretty patient to bide their time.
Cardiff have Craig Bellamy, very much a local lad, steeped in Cardiff lore and tradition, whereas Swansea are packed out with foreign types who don't know anything about the South West Derby.
Well, that's not strictly true, because is it Angel Rangel?
That's true.
I think he's played 5 or 6 of these games.
Ah.
So he know all about them.
Right, okay.
Also, Angel Rangel is one of the nicest fellas in football. You were talking earlier.
It's also
about
one of the best names in football.
Well, that is true.
Yeah.
We'll cover more names later, though.
Well, we can have him now if you want. But you were saying he's a nice chap.
Well, there was a story when
what's
I think it
angle?
Might have been last season, when there was a snow flurry in wintertime, and he had heard something on the local radio about homeless people not having anything to eat, and had gone, I think, or maybe even just gone out of his own accord with his wife with a load of food and sandwiches and stuff, and taken it around to people out and about who were very cold and didn't have anything to eat. And that makes him pretty amazing in my book.
Yeah, although didn't Mario Balotelli once do something quite like that?
Well, he allegedly gave a large sum of cash, but wasn't that one of those Balotelli stories that turned out to not be entirely true?
Possibly.
Yeah.
So basically you're saying Rangel, he's a right angle.
I'm saying that I think he's got some feelings for the area that are probably strong enough that it doesn't matter where he was born. He's obviously got the connection and the bond there.
Right. Well, no doubt we will too after Monday, because we're going to be down, Barry, in Swansea for our first live show of the season. If you're not going to be one of the thousands in the audience, I'm not sure if that's strictly representative of the capacity at the Dylan Thomas Centre. Or the fact that we're recording at lunchtime on Monday. Don't worry, because the show will be put up as usual, although for technical reasons, I'm assured, it won't actually be up until Tuesday morning on iTunes or the Guardian website. However, if you want to hear it on Monday, it'll be on this SoundCloud business, not SoundCow. That's a different thing, which hasn't been invented yet, but when it does, I want my share. Cool. Brilliant. Names. You want to talk about names? Because I was saying you were admiring Dries Mertens' goals. And I was saying, Dries Mertens. You know from the name he's going to be a player. And, Amy, you said you had a name you wanted to throw at us.
Well, I thought that he's been in the news this week. Port Vale chairman, Norman Smurthwaite, is just a wonderful name.
You hear that name, you know he's going to be a Port Vale chairman, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. It's a ridiculous story. He's banned the local newspaper, the Stoke Sentinel.
Ah.
And I think requested lots of money for them to have access to Stoke, because they had the temerity to report a story about fans putting £55 in to buy their, you know, the latest shirt that was coming out. And because delayed delivery, they didn't show up yet. So these fans who had paid up didn't have their shirts yet. And as a consequence, the Stoke Sentinel has been smurthwaited.
Wow.
Yeah, there's quite a few journalists being barred from Newcastle as well.
Yeah.
St. James's Park, for the manner in which they reported the recent fan protest.
Was it the manner or just the very fact that they dared to report it?
I'm unaware of how it was reported, but I believe Mike Ashley took exception to the manner in which it was reported rather than the fact that it was reported. Marina Hyde wrote an excellent column about football clubs banning journalists, and I had a peruse of some of the comments underneath it, which were quite extraordinary, actually, a lot of them.
In what sense?
Making out that it's perfectly acceptable to ban journalists. And presumably these are the same kind of people who would complain if stuff about their club wasn't being reported, or if pertinent questions weren't being asked by journalists. They seem to be under the impression that going reporting on a football match is a big jolly. It's enjoyable, but it's hard work. It's difficult. I find it difficult anyway.
Mm.
And very stressful.
Just one thing before we finish part two, on the subject of controversy. How about Sepp Blatter, eh?
Yeah.
Now, some people are saying this is a storm in a teacup and people shouldn't get upset, but I just felt it was a bit wrong for, A, the president of FIFA, or whatever his title is, to belittle Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm. And I really hope Ronaldo wins the Ballon d'Or now so that Sepp has to give him the thing and he can do his little march and chicken walk across the stage as he does so. And B, for the students to actually applaud this man.
I've seen the YouTube video. Obviously, I wasn't there for Sepp's entire performance. I felt a little sorry for him.
Blatter?
Yeah, I mean, he sat there in front of these students and it just looked like he wanted to entertain them. He was asked a simple question, whether he preferred Messi or Ronaldo, and the obvious thing for him to do would be to straight bat it and say it's not really his position to judge footballers, and that's up to the world. But he didn't do that. Instead, he tried to be funny, and then he said who his favourite was. And he looked really silly, but it looked like he felt pressurised by the situation into behaving in an extraordinary and atypical manner.
I have to disagree with that. Apart from the fact that if I was Sepp Blatter, I think I'd be quite pleased, given his judgment, that if I was not currying favour with him. But I think it looked to me like here was a guy who was so out of touch, unsurprisingly. He made that great symbol of laughing at his own jokes hysterically, which I think always tells you something. Mm. The level of conceit was astounding, but completely normal. And I just think it, when you look at that, you think it's beyond belief that this is the man you entrust.
Mm. But it's all right, because Michel Platini could be taking over soon. Why are you laughing, Barry?
Because he's almost certainly going to be as bad, if not worse.
But isn't that just so depressing? Because at least with Platini, when you think about what he was as a player and everything that he represented. And I think when he started out, there was a genuine idea that he was going to be different and working to quote for the good of football,
right?
But he seems to have been gone through some sort of
the latest one being the 40 team World Cup. Producer Ben says, "Give it to Beckham." That's a good shout, producer Ben.
Jonathan Wilson wrote an excellent piece yesterday, just absolutely, you know, sort of a very clinical evisceration of Platini's idea for a 40 team World Cup. And I was reading it, I was kind of felt sorry. There's probably a generation of people out there who only know Platini, the football administrator, and never seen him play. He's such a good player, just an amazing player in his pomp. And if you haven't seen him play, it's probably worth looking up his best bits on YouTube, which I'm sure there are plenty of them there.
There you go. Any kids out there, go and have a look at Platini on.
Or ask your dads.
Yep. Super stuff.
Or your mums.
Oh, sorry.
Or any relative of a relevant age. Sid Lowe in Spain. Hola.
Hello, Jimbo. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing very well. You've had a very exciting time of it Wednesday night with your Real Madrid-Sevilla game, didn't you?
It was completely bonkers. 7-4 to Real Madrid, which makes it sound like, you know, kind of Real Madrid were cruising and it was always
7-4?
Sorry, 7-3. I've added a goal there, haven't I? so it makes it sound like they were cruising, but they kind of really weren't. They were 3-0 up and playing brilliantly. Then it's 3-2 in the space of a minute. It goes to 5-3. And at 5-3, Sevilla had a penalty to make it 5-4, which they missed, and eventually they lost 7-3. But, of course, from our point of view, big news, 90 minutes for Gareth Bale. Two goals, if you can count one of them as a goal, and it might be an own goal because it bounces off the wall and goes the other way. Mm. Two goals and two assists. Yeah, two left-footed goals and right-footed assists. He played really, really well.
The first goal's a bit special.
Yeah, really nice.
He's the real deal, Sid.
Well, except that, of course, this means that we
come on, Sid. I said that for a reaction. He's the real deal.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. I'm about to respond to you.
Oh, okay.
That is possibly the worst pun in the world, not least because it relies on the need to say Real wrong. So maybe he's the Real Bale.
Yeah, that's better, isn't it? He's the Real
Bale. He's just the Real Bale. That makes sense, doesn't it? It's much better.
Yep.
But there's an equally bad pun, which is used all the bloody time in Spain, which drives me equally mad, which is that Bale, basically means worth it, yeah. So today there's loads of puns like Si que vale, Bale, yes, he's bail it, if you sort of mean. Bale, yes, he's worth it. It drives me bloody mad. a pox on their houses.
Sid, just while we were trying to or dialing you up there, Jimbo sort of likened this exciting game to Madrid, the bully boy, rich kids just kicking a blind man's stick. Would you agree?
No, I mean, that's what I mean, that it was a proper game. I mean, it wasn't that Madrid were scoring loads of goals and got caught a couple of times and you know, and therefore it wasn't much of a contest. It was a contest. I mean, the shot count, I think, is 18 against 17, so your shot count was pretty close. Two or three very good saves from both goalkeepers. As I say, that penalty to have made it 5-4, I think there would have been a little bit of nervousness from Madrid. But Madrid were very good. That said, it was also the kind of game that suits them because it was so open. And of course, Madrid, when they've got space, are brilliant. When they haven't got space, they're nowhere near as good.
Right. Okay. Well, that moves them back within a little bit of range of Barcelona. Who is it tonight? They face Espanyol in their derby.
No, it's tomorrow night. Although, to be honest, it's an entirely justified question, James, because I've completely lost track of what day it is. This run of 11 games in a row. So tonight is the last four games, I think, of week 11, and tomorrow is the first game of week 12. So weeks 10, 11, and 12 have run into each other. There's not been a gap between any of them by the end. I think it's 11, maybe 12 games in a row. Or, sorry, 12 days in a row with games.
Brilliant. OK, Espanyol, their prospects against Barcelona in that derby?
Well, I think Espanyol are really tough, really aggressive, quite hard to break down. It wouldn't be a massive surprise if there was a draw in that.
Interesting. Have Atleti played so far this week?
No, they play tonight. I think it's Granada that Atleti play. I was there yesterday at their training ground. And it's a real joy when you get to talk to a footballer who's genuinely articulate, really understands the game, really loves the game as well. I was talking to their captain, Gabby, and he was fascinating. Really, really quite interesting to hear him talk about the kind of the mechanisms and the way some of the ways that they've done this.
Well, all the other people you've interviewed of late are really going to love that one, Sid. Atletico Madrid.
It's not that it never happens.
Right.
You know, I felt very much the same way when I finished talking to Fabregas. So I think he's a very good talker as well.
Right. Okay. Sid, a question here from Gasila. I think I might be how that's pronounced. Regarding Joe Hart's position, they ask, in Spain it's been reported that Pellegrini will sign Willy Caballero in the January transfer. I think Malaga is already expecting it, and they've already signed Adan, who's released free from Madrid over the summer. What do you know about that?
Well, he's right. It's been reported in Spain. I was talking to Canal Sur Radio the other day, which is one of the Malaga-based radio stations, and they're fairly confident that a bid will come. But it feels to me, I'll be honest, this is no more than interpretive, it's reading between the lines, it feels to me like Malaga kind of effectively trying to encourage the bid in the hope that they would get good money for Willy Caballero. By the way, the Spanish, at least the Spanish amongst my friends anyway, are absolutely loving the whole Joe Hart thing, because they love to take the mickey out of English goalies and say that English goalies are rubbish. And about a year ago, I tried to tell them that we had a good goalie at last, and of course, it turns out we haven't.
All right, then. Sid, many, many thanks for that. And we look forward to catching up with you soon in this incredible mashup of football fixtures that you've got going on over there.
Yeah, well, it will finish on Monday night, and then of course it's into the Champions League with Real Madrid, Juventus, and Barcelona Milan.
Wow, big games!
Hey, apparently, Kaká was really good last night.
I didn't see the game myself, but the headline in Gazetta was Kaká and whistles. So basically, that there's him, and then after him the deluge. But like that'll be two good games in a row for him and two fairly poor performances from the rest of the Milan side.
He's supposed to have scored a very good goal.
All right, well, we're going to look at that after.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Cheers, Sid. Let's come on to the well-researched Italy roundup then, because I was busy watching Fiorentina-Napoli. You tuned into this one as well.
I did. I thought the first half was absolutely gripping and two really, really good sides with some contrasting football, and Napoli were really clinical with a couple of fantastic goals on the counter-attack, and Fiorentina tried to take the initiative, and they came back into it with a penalty that was a little bit dubious, but played some really nice stuff, and then it tailed off a bit in the second half, and then it went a bit crazy.
It did a little bit at the end. Fabulous goal from Dries Mertens, which we mentioned before. But yeah, Fiorentina looked really, I would say, effervescent, while Napoli were effective at the time, but they just didn't seem to have the same kind of urgency that, for example, Arsenal showed when they played Napoli recently.
Yeah, but also I think that just the quality of the Napoli goals. They were classic sort of sucker punches when Fiorentina was building up a bit of momentum. And the first goal as well, I mean, we talk about the Mertens one, was fantastic individual technique, but that that Higuain cross with the outside of his foot was wonderful. Mm. And a lovely finish from Callejon, who seems to have been... They've just bought so well, Napoli. I mean, virtually everyone they bought in the summer seems to have walked into the team and made an impression straight away.
Very true, very true.
Jimbo, I remember you saying when Rafa Benitez was appointed Napoli manager that you weren't quite sure his sort of regimental disposition would sit well with the general... I don't know, what would you describe it as?
Slightly more creative approach to life.
Yes, of the Neapolitans.
No, I was completely wrong.
And is there any evidence to suggest that you might have had a case?
Or? None whatsoever. He's doing brilliantly. To be fair, last night's performance was very much old school. Napoli, it was very much sit back, soak it up and hit them on the break. But in other matches, Napoli have played much more kind of forward-thinking, aggressive football. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, we were talking earlier about how some players, it's difficult if you're not a regular in the first team, you could get a bit frustrated. Mm. And a player like Insigne, for example, I mean, they seem to be rotating a lot. There's some big players.
There's a lot of talk that he and Benitez have fallen out.
Really?
Yeah. But,
interesting signing for someone, if that was the case.
Yeah. That win... now, we mentioned the craziness at the end, just to say that Cuadrado, who Arsenal are among the many clubs interested in, and he... I don't know what you thought of his performance last night. Did you think he was all that, or just a little bit kind of fancy Dan?
He reminded me a bit of Gervinho. Maybe the Arsenal Gervinho rather than the Roma Gervinho. Right. But he definitely got that fantastic burst of pace and trickery, but he's obviously got a little bit of... theatrics about his game, which is what cost him so much.
Well, indeed, although it was clearly a penalty at the end.
Clearly.
But having already dived and got a yellow card, the referee thought he was diving again, gave him a second yellow card. He got sent off, and Fiorentina ended up losing as opposed to getting a penalty, which would have given them a chance to equalise, and probably would have been a fair result. But anyway, that means that Napoli move up to within 2 points of Roma, and Juve do too, because they had a big 4-0 win against Catania, who are in real trouble. Roma, though, still to play. They're actually in action tonight at home to Chievo, which everyone's got really nervous about. There's the kind of the Lecce factor, this famous game that Roma, when they were set for the title, had to play one of the worst teams around at home, and they blew it. And that was under Sven-Göran Eriksson a long time ago. And anyway, so Chievo arriving tonight at the Stadio Olimpico. If they win that, they'll be the first Italian team ever to win their first 10 games. Anyway, there you go. Well, that's all very exciting. Roma then tonight can move it back to 5 points. And this weekend, they're going to be taking on Torino. So there are always goals involved in that one. Just to tell you, Torino yesterday were 2-0 up against Livorno. They let Livorno back into it. Livorno went 3-2 and ended up 3-3. So they'll be playing Roma. That's in Sunday Night Football, 6:45, as I'm sure you know, BT Sport, with all the goals from around Europe. Yes. And no mouth organ playing referees, Barry. None.
I'll be warming your chair in BT Sport tonight.
Oh, yeah. Cool. You're on Life's a Pitch, are you?
Yeah.
Cool.
With Martin Keown.
What time are you on?
I think, actually, it's a Halloween special, so saving on makeup, I have me and Martin Keown in the studio.
I'll be carving pumpkins.
Ghost ghouls.
And opening my door to random mask-clad hoodlums demanding sweets.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Halloween, I'm doing
tonight. So you can stuff your BT Sport. I don't want it.
There you go. Stuff your BT Sport. This is The Guardian, Simon Burton. Now, producer Ben says we've only got 10 minutes to wrap all this up, so fans of other teams we haven't mentioned yet, it's his fault, because he also wants me to mention that our Facebook group is going to be all redone. AJ Peck, I know you were complaining that it's out of control over there. It's like the Wild West. Don't worry, there's a new one on the way. A couple of posts from our regular old Football Weekly page. This is a little bit self-indulgent, but Mr. Garethy, you're a long-time poster, so I'm going to answer you. Is this World's Strongest Man that's going on Channel 5 at the moment, is that qualifies for the big show in China? No, it's last year's. It's repeats of last year's. I don't know why. It's been going on for ages. They just seem to have it on rotation. Formica Atomica points out that there we were saying Snoop Dogg, no Snoop Lion. It's Snoopzilla now. Or as Formica Atomica puts it, old men, it's Snoopzilla now.
He had my favourite quote of any Guardian interview of all time in the not-too-distant past, when he told Simon Hattinson that you couldn't pimp a bitch if I put you in a room with 100 hoes.
Well, I think that's good news from Simon Hatton's point of view, because nobody wants him to... Was it pimp any bitches?
Yeah.
Right. On to the rest of the Premier League after this. Ooh, relegation worries. That'll spice things up. Simon Burton, You've been a little bit quiet over the last part.
You were talking foreign. You were talking foreign stuff.
Well, let's talk about everyone from Swansea who are in ninth place downwards, being within 3 points of the bottom three. That adds up to drama in my book. Now, Fulham Man United, we've talked about the fact they lost to Leicester and Martin Yole's under pressure and stuff. And I don't know, they had, every now and then they pull up a result at home to Man United, though, don't they? And I'm wondering if this weekend, there's absolutely nothing that points to them getting the result here, Barry. But I'm just wondering, or Simon, or Amy, if this might be the weekend that the form book somehow... No?
You envisaging the form book arcing a parabolic arc out an open window?
I don't know why. I'm wrong, aren't I?
There's certainly there's a little bit of maverick in Fulham, although their results have been poor. Mm. And for example,
they've won their last two in the league.
That Crystal Palace match where they didn't play particularly well, but they scored a couple of phenomenal goals, and they have that potential.
They do, don't they?
They say Rodallega might be injured. He scored a couple of times against Leicester.
Right.
Though he's been in and out the side. I think it's possible. He's got potential. And like, as you say, United have slipped up there in the past.
They haven't, they? Producer Ben just pointing out, thanks, Producer Ben, that they haven't won the last two in the league because they got beat by Southampton.
They did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and against Leicester in midweek, they equalised in the 88th minute, 87th, 88th minute. And a Premier League club against a Championship club, 3-3 with 2 minutes to play, shouldn't really be getting beat.
Right.
But they got beat.
They were keeping that powder dry for the weekend, perhaps. Perhaps. West Ham are taking on Villa. West Ham are only 1 point off the bottom three. And that 3-0 against Spurs, which was hailed at the time as, you know, the start of a new direction, this new strikerless tiki-taka format that Big Sam had been itching to usher in at Upton Park. Since then they've had what, apart from that, three draws and four defeats?
Well, surely anyway, if you're going to play that kind of system at West Ham, it's going to be something that's more effective away from home than at home. They've got to have more impetus to take the initiative in home matches.
That's true.
Well, Villa's form away from home is very good.
Terrific,
and West Ham's form at home is very bad.
I hear what you're saying, Barry.
You do the math, Jimbo. Villa will also, for this game, be wearing some very arresting sort of glow-in-the-dark lime green third-choice kit.
Really?
Which yes. Should.
So you're telling me that Villa wear claret and blue, and so do West Ham. So for their only other game, their only away game at another claret-wearing team, their second kit won't cut it.
No, apparently there's a clarity bluey patch on it that it has been decided may clash with West Ham's clarity.
I think they need to be going back to their kit designer and having a little chat.
Mm. Although the Dayglow one sounds fun. But football's Richard Hughes, who still takes to the field for Bournemouth, of course, he was saying last night, because he was in for the Fiorentina and Napoli thing, and they were wearing blue and purple, which are not massively dissimilar shades, at least to the way their kits are designed, that he thinks it might just be him, but any kind of similar patch of colour, whether it's only a little square of claret, it can distract the player when you're looking around for someone to pass to. But he might just be making excuses for himself.
Well, I thought on Sunday, in the Newcastle-Sunderland game, I was finding it quite difficult to tell who was who, because both teams were wearing black shorts, and the stripes were, it was kind of, and I noticed people on Twitter were also going, ooh, it's a bit trickier.
Well, football cliches, did you see his post, their post rather, where he posted the list of all the people who had written, is it just me? Or
okay. there you go.
Yeah.
I thought Newcastle might have been forced to change their shirts at halftime, but they weren't.
Speaking of clashing kits, Stoke-Southampton, I wonder who's going to go day-glow in this one. Stoke, of course, the only team that keeps more scoring columns clean in the Premier League than Southampton, their own in their case. Of course, not likely to see too many goals, I imagine.
No, but Stoke have only conceded twice at home this season.
Ooh,
and
they?
Southampton have only conceded three times home or away. So, the prospect for a rather dour affair seems quite high.
Stoke were quite lively at Old Trafford, weren't they?
Well, I was just going to mention Peter Crouch's pretty tasty overhead volley that smacked against the crossbar midweek in the Capital One Cup.
Mm.
He scored as well in that match, but he was exhibiting his long-limbed skills to the max.
Cool.
So, yeah, maybe some goals will happen.
I fancy Stoke to have more of them. I don't know why.
All right. Mm. Interesting.
Man City, Norwich and West Brom, Crystal Palace. Man City, Norwich, Man City. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, do you know who the last team to win in the league away to Man City were?
Tell me, Jimbo.
Go on, you know though, don't you, Amy?
It was Norwich. It was Norwich on the last day of last season,
yeah,
when Manchester City had just lost the FA Cup final and lost their manager and were in a bit of a funk. So it was a good time to play them.
Right.
It was a bit of a rogue match that, because not only did Norwich beat Manchester City when ordinarily they would never expect to and really wouldn't, but in so doing, they lifted themselves about four or five places in the league table.
Mm.
And now they all think they should come 11th because of that match. Oh. Had it been played any other time of the season, they'd probably have lost at Manchester City and would have finished 15th, 16th and would have lower expectations for this season, lower and probably more rational expectations for this season.
Well, interestingly, or not, if depending on your point of view, the games Norwich have played this season, corresponding fixtures last season, they've twice as many points this season.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that is interesting then. I'm just going to finish off because producer Ben wants his studio back with the West Brom Crystal Palace game. Now, they had a big defeat last time, West Brom, against Liverpool, but that's their only loss in the last six games, and they have been looking a lot more solid. Crystal Palace, anything but, and no word yet on who's going to be taking over there. It's still Keith Millen in charge, is it, for this one?
Keith Millen is almost certainly going to be in charge at the weekend. The process is dragging on, and according to some of the papers today, it may drag on for a while yet.
Right. The names mentioned, Martin O'Neill, who I've seen suggestions that he's declined the offer. Alan Pardew.
I think that
is he not busy elsewhere?
I think that Crystal Palace is suggesting that they would like a manager who has some connection with the club.
Right.
And that has led some newspapers to just wildly connect them with every player.
What about Ian Dowie? Has he been...
Ian Dowie is currently available, as far as I know.
Yeah, he is. What, Amy?
Oh, I remember going to Crystal Palace's training ground when he was their manager before.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to do his press conferences at about 6:30 in the morning.
Right.
And... talk.
If you were late, you have to go through a gauntlet of hacks beating you.
I think that would have probably dulled the senses and made the press conferences a bit more bearable.
Oh. I think Ian Dowie's first spell at Crystal Palace, where he coined bounce back ability,
yep,
and had the players doing ballet, I think. And he
things
was
which have since become standard for most clubs.
There was a novelty to him then.
Hmm. I like Ian Dowie. Okay, that's an option for you. Otherwise, it's Chris Coleman, Pardew. Pulis wants 1.5 million or something. Is that the sticking point there for?
Pulis certainly was being paid a lot more by Stoke than Crystal Palace were paying Holloway and more than they would like to offer.
Right.
Coleman would seem like a fairly decent appointment. He might not have shone as Wales manager, but. I thought he was pretty harshly treated by Fulham.
Mm.
He was never given much for a transfer budget there, and then he was booted out, and they promptly handed a big bag of swag to his replacement. I thought he did a pretty good job as Fulham manager, really.
All right.
And obviously he has the Palace links, he played for them. So.
Yeah, Neil Warnock, that's another name in there.
It's not the most inspiring list in the world, is it? I think they should give it to Eric Young, just because I'd like to see if he became a manager, would he still wear his brown headband?
Well, with that, we reach the end of our weekend preview and the end of today's podcast. We're going to be back on Monday. We're going to be live in Swansea. Do join us if you can. Otherwise, the podcast will be up on Monday or Tuesday, depending on your format of choice. Have a super weekend. I think there's going to be a pay-per-view up on the Friday. Have a great time, Simon, whatever you're up to. Are you going anywhere special?
This weekend, Watford against Leicester,
right,
live on Sky. Lunchtime kickoff on Saturday. I'll be reporting on that for The Observer.
Brilliant. Okay. Barry?
I'll go to Swansea.
Woo! Lucky you. Yeah. I'll join you down there. Amy?
Go and see Luis Suarez.
Cool. Well, that'll be a great game there. Super. Lovely. Have a nice one, listeners. We'll be back on Monday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.